let's recap what we saw last week. Where's Eretz Yisrael?
You need a pin for that, a magnifying glass.
Yeah, right. Basically here, let's call it here.
Just above Cairo. Yeah, I see Cairo, yeah.
See Cairo, right? So it says Jerusalem somewhere here.
Oh, yeah.
So that Eretz Yisrael. Kuzari told us last week that time begins with Eretz Yisrael. Time begins with Eretz Yisrael. So basically, if we'll just sum it up, the way it works is like this. The first day started here. That was Shabbos. Why was Shabbos the first day? Why wasn't Sunday the first day? That first day of creation was Sunday. But Shabbos was when Adam HaRishon was banished from... Erev Shabbos was when Adam HaRishon was banished from Gan Eden. That was when he really entered the physical realm. So that was when days, the way we know it, Adam actually experienced days the way we know it. And the first day that happened to him was Shabbos. So for all practical purposes, time started with Shabbos, and it started in Eretz Yisrael. Now, therefore, we would say that as we orbit around the globe, right? Actually, we're going to have the sun orbiting instead of the earth turning, okay? As the sun goes like this, it started with Eretz Yisrael. When it hits Eretz Yisrael again, it becomes Sunday. Up till then, it should be Shabbos, right? Shabbos, 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 Shabbos. Which means that the day changes at Eretz Yisrael, and all the rest of the world is behind Eretz Yisrael. Shabbos is first in Eretz Yisrael, then moves across Europe, right? Then comes to the Americas, then finally China. This is China here, right? China is the extreme east. This is the easternmost part of the world. Is the end of Shabbos. However, basically, what the Kuzari said was, it can't really work that way. It can't really work that way because you don't want to have a situation within one time zone. He says, first of all, you have to determine what's east. Anywhere in the world can be east. We call China the Far East. Well, why is China the Far East? Perhaps America is east, right? Because we go east all the way to west. But actually, if you go this way, from China back to America, America is east of China. So,
no matter, it's all just a convention.
It's all convention. That's right.
Just so that we can speak the same language.
And the truth is, the date line is also convention. Right? Date line is also kind of arbitrary. And actually, in general, it's considered to be like kind of here, going through, as we said last week, that the universal date line is international date line. That's what it's called. Is considered to be going through the area of Earth that has the least continents. Because what everybody wants to avoid doing, this is what we said last week, what everybody wants to avoid doing, the Torah, the world at large, nobody wants to have a situation where within one time zone you have a date line. Because that will mean, if the date time were lined to be, let's say, Eretz Yisrael, because really that's where time started. Naturally, the date line should be Eretz Yisrael, right, with Eretz Yisrael go. For most Eretz Yisrael. But naturally the dateline should be Eretz Yisrael, right? But if it's Eretz Yisrael, that means that a person can take a walk somewhere within the same time zone and he walks into the previous day. Because, right, we say that when the sun hits Eretz Yisrael, it becomes Monday. But here a little bit over in Iran, it's still Sunday. You walk a few feet over and now you're back in Sunday. Okay? So that is not a good idea. Practically, it doesn't make sense. And therefore, the Torah mandates, and the truth is, Seichel mandates, this is Svara, that no. The dateline has to begin in a place where it makes sense. And therefore, as we said, Lemaisa, the dateline begins at the beginning of the continent where Eretz Yisrael is, which means China, which means the east coast of China. So practically what this means is, even though really time started here over Eretz Yisrael, the day changes at China. 18 hours after Eretz Yisrael. China is 6 hours east of Eretz Yisrael. So the sun, we're discussing the international dateline. So, yes, day started here. First day started here. First Shabbos started here. Moved around, right? Europe had Shabbos. America had Shabbos. Then we hit the east coast of China. The whole Pacific Ocean had Shabbos. We hit the east coast of China, it turned Sunday. So China missed out on their first Shabbos. There was no first Shabbos. China didn't have their first day. No challenge in China. Only rice. Anyways, there's only rice in 7 days a week. So, and since then, that's where the day changes. So that's what we say. Yes, time started in Eretz Yisrael, but yet the day changes at China. And now the Kuzari just mentions two interesting things. He contends with, see, the philosophers and the astronomers and whoever the people who engage in these things are, there were different schools of thought as to how it really works. And in determining exactly where time started and how time started, the Guzari makes a couple of interesting points. There were a couple of shitas. First of all, there was a shita that said that time actually began with midday. Time began at midday. That was how it started, and it started in the westmost part of the world. At first glance, that conflicts with what the sage is saying. He's saying the time started in Eretz Yisrael, right? But actually, something amazing comes out. We're still fighting with the dateline. Wait, I'm sorry. Although probably even more comfortable on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the Kuzari says something very interesting. He'll just recap in short. The bottom line of what we're concluding is that the time actually started with Eretz Yisrael, but yet the dateline, meaning the first day started in Eretz Yisrael, which is about here. Here we have Asia, east, reaching Eretz Yisrael, the Middle East, all the way over to the edge of Europe. Okay? These are basically the British Isles. Okay? So, time started with Eretz Yisrael, which means that the first Shabbos was in Eretz Yisrael, and Shabbos moved around here, yet the dateline changes at the beginning of China. So it turns Sunday here. Okay. Now, because again, he's going to now contend with the different schools of thought. So again, as we're saying, it was actually pretty genius the way they worked. I don't know how they worked. The commentators here have pages and pages describing how the scholars of those days reached their conclusions. Just look here, the commentators just go on and on. This is really not the pages and pages of explaining the academics here, but how the scholars of 1,000 years ago reached their conclusions. But basically, there were a couple of schools of thought. One was, as we started saying, that time actually began at midday. Midday was the first point in time, and that started over the westmost part of civilization, which basically means the British Isles, that area. Okay? That seems to conflict with what we're saying, that time began in Eretz Yisrael. So listen to this, he says something amazing. Well, you know what? But first we'll present yet another school of thought. We're actually going to have three schools of thought here, and the Kuzari is going to show how none of them are conflicting with our version, and they're all really saying the same thing. The other school of thought is that no, time began with China, which is the eastmost part of the world. What's that?
No, I mean, that's
just the word. Oh, so we'll see. Good. You're already touching on the point. Because Ari says, what happened is, as the way the Torah puts it, time began with Eretz Yisrael. But let's take something into account. When does time begin in the Torah? At night. Time begins at night. The day starts at night. So he says, if on the first day of existence began with night in Eretz Yisrael, what does that mean? That means it was midday over the west. Because Eretz Yisrael is right between east and west. We call it the Mideast, right? This is east, this is west, for all practical purposes. That was the whole civilized world of that point. Asia through Europe. Okay, east and west. Eretz Yisrael is right in the middle. Now, if time began with Eretz Yisrael, in Torah terms, that means that time began with night in Eretz Yisrael. What will that mean? Where will the sun be positioned if we want the first night to be in Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, if we want time to start with sundown in Eretz Yisrael, where will the sun be positioned?
west.
The sun will be positioned right over the west, 6 hours west of Eretz Yisrael, right? It will be midday over the west, which is sundown in Eretz Yisrael. That's where time starts. You get what I'm saying? Then when Hashem wanted time to start, what he did was, he created the sun coming down in Eretz Yisrael. If time began with the sun coming down in Eretz Yisrael, so where was the sun at that time? If sun was coming down in Eretz Yisrael, it means it was overhead, 6 hours ahead, at the western point of civilization. So it was it works out perfectly. He says, the schools of thought are not conflicting with us. Just they're saying, the sun began directly overhead over the British Isles. It's not exactly the British Isles, it's more west, it's somewhere in the Atlantic. But the sun began overhead over the British Isles. Exactly! Because that means that the sun, it began with sundown over Eretz Yisrael. When the sun is overhead, when it's midday, to the west, at the westmost point, it's sundown in Eretz Yisrael, 6 hours back. So both of those schools are saying the same point. Now he moves on to address, alright?
When did Adam sin?
What's that?
When did he sin?
So he sinned on Friday afternoon. But now what we're actually doing now is working even further back to the first day of creation. Somehow, it's amazing, they go through all the arichos. The scholars of those times had ways of trying to determine that. Of ways of determining when things started happening. And they came to the conclusion that yeah, it started with midday. It's amazing that they came up with this. That it all began at midday over the west. And he says it's exactly what the Torah says. The Torah says that it started with sundown over Eretz Yisrael. Sundown over Eretz Yisrael is midday in the west. Beautiful. Now there's another school of thought. The other school of thought says no. The day began with China, with the eastmost point. Right? That's the eastmost point of civilization, the east coast of China. But the Zari says that doesn't conflict with us either. Because there's only a question of semantics here. What's called the day beginning? We call the day beginning nighttime. They call the day beginning sunrise. Now again, if we're saying that the sun started at midday over the west, because it started with sundown in Eretz Yisrael, where's the first place where the sun rose? The east. On the east. So the first beginning of the day was China. All three are saying the same thing. So that's how he reconciles the Torah's version of when and how time started with the prevalent schools of thought of the time, which were understood as disputing. He's actually saying there's no dispute, not between the Torah and not between the two of them either. It's all saying the same thing, just it's a question of semantics. What are you talking about? Are you talking about where the sun actually started, or are you talking about the first sunrise, or are you talking about when night started, which is what we call the beginning of time? Now, practically speaking, we might end up with a dispute, because where will you put the date line?
How old is the date line?
What's that?
How old is the date line?
According to the Bizarre, it goes back to the beginning of time. Well, it's really arbitrary, because again, the sun has gone like this the whole time. It's kind of arbitrary for people, or for the Torah to decide. There's no natural means of determining where the date line is, right? It's arbitrary. The sun is going like this. You have to decide at which point does it turn Monday here, or does it turn Monday here? So basically,
or anywhere in between.
Or anywhere in between. That's a conventional wisdom decided that it's the date line is over here. Why? That's most convenient. You don't want to have the date line in one time zone, because then you'll have two people living on two sides of the street. For one person it's Monday, for one person it's Sunday. So therefore, they went with the date line that works best for practical purposes. A date line that simply doesn't really cut across much continent. It's directly opposite that area in England, right? What's it called again? Greenwich, right. Greenwich Village. So right opposite that, you basically have, that's basically here. Like this area. Oh, so the Torah does. It's the universal date.
This looks like a nice option if I was to choose one.
What's that? This is not as clean as this.
There's still, that's right through Hawaii, you know?
What's that?
Hawaii is somewhere around here.
anywhere you do it is going to have to move around certain places. Some of the other is nowhere it really works.
Between Europe and here,
this is the best place.
Clean shot.
Where?
Right here. Clean break. Yeah, like 15 degrees of latitude to play with. There's no islands, no nothing.
You got this up here. You got Greenland.
Greenland.
Is that?
Greenland.
All right.
A bunch of what are they called? Vikings.
All right. Vikings have to have Shabbos too. I have from Vikings somewhere. But the truth is that this is where we conflict. At the end of the day, it comes out to what the Kuzari is saying, and this is the Chazon Ish Cheshbon. This is a nice and an interesting practical implication. Again, we're saying that the day begins over here on the east coast of China. Why? Again, why does it begin with the east coast of China? Because really the day should begin with Eretz Yisrael. Just any concept of wisdom mandates that it should not be in the middle of a continent, and therefore we move it to the eastmost a piece of land that Eretz Yisrael is on, which is the east coast of China. So we say that it starts here. Okay? Universal convention says that it's basically around here. Okay? The big difference is, here's Japan, east Japan. Sorry. So you got Japan is off the east coast of China. Right? Japan is off the east coast of China.
According to the Chazon Ish, and not according to
the Kuzari. Because the Chazon Ish is explaining the Kuzari. Japan is off the east coast of China. According to the universal dateline, Japan is before China. Meaning, Shabbos hits Japan before it hits China, and before it hits Eretz Yisrael. According to the way the Kuzari, as the Chazon Ish points out, according to the way the Kuzari is defining the universal dateline, it starts on the east coast of China, which means that Japan just misses the dateline, and Japan is actually about 23 hours behind China, and 18 hours behind Eretz Yisrael. This was a very interesting machlokes, as we mentioned the other week. Very interesting machlokes at Poskim Lamaisa, when there was a big Jewish community in Japan. And there was a big machlokes. There were the Poskim that was saying that no, you go by this state line, and therefore Japan is ahead of Eretz Yisrael. They keep Shabbos and Kippur, etc., before Eretz Yisrael does. They begin Shabbos and Kippur 18 hours before Eretz Yisrael, 6 hours before Eretz Yisrael. The Chazon Ish said, based on what we're seeing here in the Kuzari, they begin Shabbos 18 hours after Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that really, in a nutshell, is what the Kuzari is saying. I want to quickly look through it just to make sure we didn't miss any important points. But that's really the bottom line. And he says also, it's interesting how he says that he just explained how all the different schools of thought are really all coming together. He brought them together in a genius way, right? Well, it's all really saying the same thing as the Torah. He says, actually, this whole chachma of determining the dateline and how time started, etc., it's all really traditional wisdom that comes from Judaism. Chazal had that Kabbalah going back from the time of Nevuah, when that was basically how also Chazal set up the whole concept of the Moilad. We won't get into that now, but how you determine when Rosh Chodesh is in relation to the appearance of the moon, how long before the moon appears does the moon actually start waxing again. So he says the reason that they came up with these different equations kind of ambiguous is because they were really working off that old traditional wisdom which had come from the Jews. Just they construed it in these different ways, and therefore they reached a conclusion that it started at midday over the west side. They reached the conclusion that the first day began with China. Really all saying the same thing, all based on the same source, the Torah's wisdom. Okay. Now again, just one other interesting point, as we pointed out last week, one other interesting point that the Chazon Ish makes also is that, once again, we have the dateline, we say, is on the east coast of China. Now, why the east coast of China? Because he said, really it's Eretz Yisrael. Right? Really it's Eretz Yisrael, which is here. Right? And really it's Eretz Yisrael, but we go from Eretz Yisrael, we don't want it to be cut through a continent, so we go from Eretz Yisrael all the way to the east, a line to the east, which brings us to the east coast of China. So the Chazon Ish says, now, we're going to make the dateline here, cut all the way across the globe like this, you are cutting across continents, right? You went from the east coast of China, you cut up, you're cutting Siberia out of Russia. This is Siberia, up here is Russia. Okay? Oh, so the Chazon Ish says that actually we make the dateline like this. You make it along the coast. The dateline goes along the coast. And what comes out is, as we pointed out, something very interesting and even paradoxical. The dateline is not a straight line from the east coast of China. The dateline goes all along the coast, which makes it include Siberia, right, all this part of Russia. It also goes down and hits Australia down here. Goes around Australia. See, Australia is over here. Goes around Australia and includes it in the dateline. That's why Australia is earlier than Eretz Yisrael, not behind Eretz Yisrael. But what comes out is that, yeah, Japan, since it's off the coast, is going to be behind Eretz Yisrael. Japan here is off the coast. It's going to be behind Eretz Yisrael. Siberia, which is even more east than Japan, will be ahead of Eretz Yisrael. Siberia, for our purposes, will be considered to that side of the dateline, and Japan will be considered to that side of the dateline, even though Japan is actually more in that direction than Siberia is. Okay, that's putting it down in a very big nut, in a coconut shell. Okay. Fine. So now, okay, after we passed look at all these pages of commentary, pages and pages, but we passed through all this, and really what was his point here? His point here really was just to make the simple point that time began with Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Shabbos is determined according to Eretz Yisrael, the Yom Tovim are determined according to Eretz Yisrael, all really in the context of his broader discussion of the importance of Eretz Yisrael. So now we'll continue toward the end of Eis Chav. So now, So now, yes, determining the Shabbosim of Hashem, Umayade Hashem, and the festivals of Hashem, Tluya Va'oretz Shehi Nachlas Hashem, is all dependent on that land that is the called the estate of Hashem. So really what he's doing here is something beautiful. He's showing how time and place also gets intertwined. Right? The dateline. Time and place also becomes intertwined, and therefore the place that the sanctified place is also the root of the sanctified times. It's really all coming from that same root. All of existence, sanctity comes from the same point. Time and place connect as well. So now, Imashe Kroatoi, he says, and we also find Eretz Yisrael. Now we're going back, step out of all this complication, forget the globe. Going back to our discussion of just showing how distinguished Eretz Yisrael is in Hashem's eyes, and to appreciate how much spirituality rides on it. La'ashem nikres har kodshoi. Therefore, we find Eretz Yisrael called Hashem's holy mountain. Vahadoim raglov. These are also amazing statements. Hadoim raglov means it's Hashem's footrest. Meaning, it's like we said before, Hashem is in the upper world, right? But he connects to this world, right? Hashem is in the upper world, but it's the bottom of him rests in this world. Where? Eretz Yisrael. We're here, we're standing at Hashem's feet, Kiviyachol. Right? Mishah HaShamayim. In the same sense, it's also called the gateway to heaven. Because again, if we're saying that, so to speak, Hashem extends down, his feet rest here, that means that Eretz Yisrael is the place where it's the gateway. It's the gateway. It's where heaven meets earth. It's where heaven connects with earth. It's where all the channels to heaven are open. The Chimitziyon Teitzei Torah. Also, the Pasuk, right? We always sing this on Simchas Torah. What does it mean? From Tzion, Torah comes out. What does that mean? What does that mean? Simply understood, it means that the Kaihanim aren't Siyim, they're busy issuing the Torah. What it means is, what's the source of the Torah? Torah is being conveyed by Hashem into this world. Torah is the influx of godliness into this world. The channel of that is Eretz Yisrael. It's through Eretz Yisrael that it pours into the rest of the world. We see that it was considered virtuous for our forefathers to try to live there, right? Avraham Avinu, besides the self-sacrifice that he made in coming to Eretz Yisrael, but also his insistence that Yitzchak should not leave Eretz Yisrael. Want to borrow our globe? Maybe the Knanim, while it was in the hands of the Knanim, they cussed from love, and how much they longed for it. Yaakov Avinu, right? When he left Eretz Yisrael, he knew that he wasn't going to be coming back. He insisted at least on his body being Eretz Yisrael, his body being buried in Eretz Yisrael. Ba'aloisam atzmoisam eleo, ki Yaakov v'Yosef. Yaakov and Yosef both insisted. They wanted their bodies brought to Eretz Yisrael. They just wanted to be as connected with Eretz Yisrael as possible, because once again, Eretz Yisrael was saturated with Hashem. Connection with Eretz Yisrael meant connection with Hashem. Presence of Eretz Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael meant being in the presence of Hashem. L'tchinas Moshe l'Yosef. Look how badly Moshe Rabbeinu longed to see it. Moshe Rabbeinu never actually made it in. Look how much he longed to see it. V'nimne'ami menu v'hayo ketzef. It was, the punishment was not granting him. Right? That was Hashem's way of punishing Moshe. How could you punish Moshe Rabbeinu? What could he possibly care about? He was punished with Eretz Yisrael, being deprived of Eretz Yisrael. Thou oisa loy. And note also that Hashem showed Moshe favor by showing him Eretz Yisrael from that mountaintop. That also was considered Hashem did him a favor. He let him see Eretz Yisrael. What about us?
What about us?
To realize how fortunate we are. And also, how you see how all the different nations, the Hoidu, the Yavam, the Persian, India, I guess he means like the Medes, and the Greeks and others, they all wanted to have Karbonis Bon on their behalf in Eretz Yisrael. All the different kings, you even see in the Greek kings, the Roman kings, right? They used to send karbanos to Eretz Yisrael. Were they sending karbanos to all the different deities of all their different subjects? No, all of them recognized the greatness of the charge, the reality of Eretz Yisrael. You see all the kings of yesteryear were trying to get the Jews to daven for them in the Beis HaMikdash. You also find different kings who invested money in these places, right? Koresh, the king of Paras Umadai, he sponsored big sums towards the building of the Beis HaMikdash. They considered it a very great merit. Even Hiram went ahead and renovated the Beis HaMikdash. Even though they actually practiced different religions, they all recognized the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, and they all wanted to curry favor with the God residing in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem. Because, yes, they had these other religions because they weren't accepted by the true faith. The Torah wasn't interested in them. And he says, note also how interesting it is how all the nations of the world hold Eretz Yisrael so high and revere Eretz Yisrael, even though today we do not see the Shekhinah manifest in Eretz Yisrael. It always remains in the consciousness somehow. Worldwide, Eretz Yisrael is, there's something about it. Right? That's why today it makes no sense. Right? Again, you look at the globe, how you can't even find the spot of where Eretz Yisrael is. Such a tiny area, but somehow it's always the center of attention. It's always the focal point. It's because there's something here that's being sensed worldwide. You also see all the different nations, all just making the deal, you know, they're all dead bent, intent on having Eretz Yisrael, conquering Eretz Yisrael. What's the big deal? And you see, they're all busy competing over Eretz Yisrael. Everyone except for us is busy vying for Eretz Yisrael because we're exiled and we're oppressed. So, you see that Eretz Yisrael just has this natural draw. Everyone recognizes something about Eretz Yisrael even if they can't put a finger on it. Eretz Yisrael always was somehow a distinctive place that uncannily so, unexplicably so. And of course, if we're going to start getting into Chazal's descriptions, he was just showing now from the Torah, and practically speaking, how you see, look, everybody relates to Eretz Yisrael. If we're actually going to start getting into what our tradition has to say about Eretz Yisrael, it goes on and on and on. So, Omar al-Kuzari. So the king of Kuzar says, tell me a little bit of what tradition, of what Chazal have to say about Eretz Yisrael. So the sage says, I'll give you some samplings of what Chazal said. They said, among other things, Hakol Malin Eretz Yisrael, Vein Hakol Metzin. Anybody who wants to move to Eretz Yisrael can require his family to move to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, is that right? But a person who wants to move out of Eretz Yisrael and his family protests, his wife, that he doesn't have a right to move her out. Whoever wants to be in Eretz Yisrael wins. V'dano isho she'ino roitzo lali simbalo Eretz Yisrael she'tek t'sholi b'ksuba. What if a husband wants to move to Eretz Yisrael and the wife says, no, I want to stay here. We're happy here, we're settled here. Say no, he has the upper hand. And if they get divorced over this, she relinquishes any rights. Meaning, it's called that he's 100% right here. And also vice versa. If the wife tells the husband, I want to move to Eretz Yisrael, and he refuses, we will require him to give a get to pay her full ksuba. He can't say she's making the problems. No, she's justified in what she's saying. The Amru. And Chazal also said, Lailam Yadur Adam Eretz Yisrael, a person should live in Eretz Yisrael, Afilu Be'ir Sheruba Kusim. Even if he's going to be in a city of hostile Kusim, where Kusim were hostile to the Jewish people, better to live there. Rather than live in friendly territory in Eretz in Chutz Laaretz, in a Jewish area. Because a person living in Eretz Yisrael is a person who has a God. Whereas a person living in Chutz Laaretz is like a person who does not have a God. Very scary statement. Right? What does that mean? So, well, first he substantiates it like Chazal do. It says about David, when he was chased out of Eretz Yisrael, when he was fleeing Shaul, etc., when he had to leave Eretz Yisrael, how did he describe it? He said, because I was banished today istapeach benachlas Hashem, from retaining my share in the land of Hashem. Leimar, it's like they told me, lecha avod Elohim achir, go worship other gods. Meaning David is equating having to move to Chutz La'aretz with having to worship other gods. Leimar, which teaches you that by living in Chutz La'aretz it says no, you're worshipping other gods. Now what does this mean? It certainly doesn't mean that a person living in Chutz La'aretz is worshipping other gods, but on a deeper level, it's like we said before, Chazal said it, there's a concept that Hashem, every land or every nation, every land has its ministering angel, its tsar, right? And each land, each nation has its tsar fighting for its shamayim. If you see that country X is enjoying plenty, it's because its ministering angel did a good job for them, and it's managing to pull a lot of parnasa for that nation, right? And the Jews also, they're getting it from there. Whereas, who's the ministering angel in Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael, there is no ministering angel. Eretz Yisrael, it's Hashem hands-on. And therefore, a person living in Eretz Yisrael is dealing directly with Hashem. A person living in Eretz Yisrael is getting his parnasa directly from Hashem. He's getting his success in all areas. He's getting his health directly from Hashem. That's why you see that Eretz Yisrael defies many of the normal rules of normalcy that are prevalent worldwide. One of the most simple examples, the Torah contrasts Eretz Yisrael with Mitzrayim, saying that Mitzrayim is different than Eretz Yisrael. Mitzrayim has a Nile. There's no need for rain. It has its sustenance. It's taken care of. Right? Whereas Eretz Yisrael is not like that. Eretz Yisrael depends on rain. What's going on? What's the deeper level? On the one hand, you might say superficially, Mitzrayim is in a better situation. They're secure. They never have to worry about rain. They always have their water supply guaranteed. But on a deeper level, what's going on is something else. Yes, Eretz Yisrael is a bit of a rougher hole. Why? Because you're dealing directly with Hashem. In Mitzrayim, Hashem said, manifests like he's relegating it to a certain tsar, to a certain ministering angel. You take care of this nation, don't let them bother me, keep them off my back. So Hashem gave them a Nile, take your Nile, now leave me alone. In Eretz Yisrael, it's Hashem directly dealing with the Jewish people, and therefore, no, there isn't automatically water. There's water when Hashem gives. If you're on good terms with Hashem, if you're earning Hashem's favor, the water comes with plenty, but not that. Therefore, the superficial person might say, what do I need this for? But the truth is that that's the most meaningful of existences. When your existence is, when you ask Hashem for it, you get it. When you don't get it. That's the most meaningful of existence. That's the way it works in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, things don't run naturally. You see it all over the place. Things don't run naturally. Look at the military history of the way things work here, right? You look at the politics here. Everything is abnormal here. It's also, you said it, there was some military academy when they were studying world warfare, world history of warfare. So some Jewish cadet asked, how come they study all the different militaries of all the different nations of history, how come they don't also study the Jewish wars? So the instructor, whoever it is, I don't know how it works in military academies, he said, we can't study Jewish wars because there's no pattern. We can't glean anything from it. There's no pattern, there's no rules. The Jewish wars are completely uncanny and haphazard. Sometimes they won against all odds, sometimes they lost against all odds, because once again, with the other nations, Hashem says, take a military and leave me alone. Or build yourself a military and good luck. But the Jewish nation, it never works that way. You're not going to have a military which in and of itself is defending the Jewish people. When Hashem is there, it works. When Hashem is not there, it doesn't work. Sometimes you can have a military that's very sound and they'll suffer humiliating defeats. Sometimes you can have an ineffective military, a deficient military, but Hashem decided they're going to win. This is a manifestation of, yes, Eretz Yisrael is run by Hashem. So now, now, it says that Mitzrayim is actually considered a notch above the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is Kalvachoymer of Mitzrayim, that it's so distant from Hashem. They said as follows. If Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim, Hashem actually grants Mitzrayim certain favor. How's that? Hashem says, "Loi tisa'iv Mitzri, you shall not abominate the Egyptian." And Hashem is showing certain favor to Mitzrayim. Yet, also, we're not allowed to resettle in Mitzrayim. Now, sometimes that's taken in as there's something specific about Mitzrayim. Hashem doesn't want us living there. But actually, there's another angle on this also in Chazal. Chazal is saying exactly the opposite. Mitzrayim is a notch above the other nations. You see that the Torah says, don't abominate the Egyptian. Right? Yet the Torah says, don't ever resettle there. Shara, that's the Slay Kol Shekin. Certainly, we should not settle in other lands. The situation today, we're conforming with Hashem's decree to settle us in other lands. But when the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, properly settled in Eretz Yisrael, they should not be settling in other lands. The Amru, and they said, "Kol haKavur be'Eretz Yisrael, a person who's buried in Eretz Yisrael, ki lo kavur tachas hamizbeach. It's as though he's buried right under the mizbeach." And they also said that it's great to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, but to die in Eretz Yisrael is even greater. Because it's like they said, a person whom Eretz Yisrael accepts while he's alive is manifesting a greater level than a person who Eretz Yisrael accepted after death. And Chazal also said about a person who could have lived in Eretz Yisrael but did not, that he shouldn't be bought to be buried there either. He didn't want to utilize the opportunity in his lifetime. He squandered it. He doesn't get it after he's dead. It's in general a big principle. Don't figure on leaving your achievements for after you die. And people figure, I'll leave big amounts of money for tzedakah after I die. Right? No, no. Do things while you're alive. You don't know. While you're alive, you can grab your own zchusim. After you're dead, it's not so pashut to guarantee that you'll have the zchusim. Same goes for Eretz Yisrael. Shamu, they said, "Bechayechem, benachalosi samtu l'toyeva." In your lifetime, you considered my land an abomination. You weren't interested in coming here. And then you only said, "Oh, once I die, then I'll grant Eretz Yisrael. I'll grace it with my presence, right? Then I'll deign to allow Eretz Yisrael to have you." Shkoyach, who needs your dead corpse? You didn't want to come and live here. Keep your corpse out of here also. Now, we'll have to put this into perspective. How do we understand that today? Okay, we'll have to discuss this. And also, listen how Rabbi Chanina responded. There was a man who had a brother living in Chutz La'aretz, and his brother died childless. You know that the halacha is that if a person's brother dies childless, there's a mitzvah for him to marry his brother's widow. So they asked, "May this fellow travel to Chutz La'aretz to marry his brother's widow?" So listen how Rabbi Chanina responded. So Rabbi Chanina said, "Achim nasa kusi sumeis." His brother went and married a goyta, meaning went to Chutzlaretz to marry. Married a Goyter. Baruch Hamokim Sha'arogoy. Blessed is Hashem who killed him. You hear that? Well, who yeared it? Dacharov. And he wants to go now follow him there. Okay, we'll have to continue this next week and put this into perspective.
Does he have two liver?